Bye, Gani, everyone. This is Professor Amin Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University of Long Beach, Africana Studies Department, welcoming you to the Conscious Corner, a term that was coined by historian Joe Hembrick, the name of our show, a podcast that discussed critical issues facing African people to get a Black perspective, what we call Black truth with regards to dealing with the media, dealing with events and activities, speaking truth to the people first and speaking truth to power second. So without delay, we're going to have an open news forum today. And we're going to try to deal with an understanding of some of the critical highlights and critical on what we call events that have taken place that contributes to the forward flow and consciousness of us as a people. And that's very important that we recognize the beauty of us as a people and our contributions to our liberation and our practices and our love for each other. And that when one achieve, we all achieve. When one go down, we all go down. That's unity. So my co-host and one of the founders of this podcast, Brother Joe Hembrick, is an educator who taught, served as an administrator and coach in a span of 39 years. That's some longevity. That's an institution. 39 years. He graduated from Compton High School in 1971, attended Los Angeles Southwest College, UCLA, Loyola Marymount, and California State University, Dominguez Hill. He has an AA degree, a BA degree in history, teaching and administrative credentials in education, and a master's degree in education administration. So that's a lot of heavy credentials. Joe Hembrick has an extensive football coaching tenure from 1976 to 2000. He coached at Los Angeles Southwest College, Compton College, and Linwood and Centennial High Schools, all in California. Joe Hembrick professes that all of the so-called academic institutions provided job training, but my real education was obtained, as he said, from Essawan Bookstore. That's what the number one Black bookstore in the Los Angeles, California area, and from various libraries in Southern California. So we welcome Joe. We also want to recognize the provider of this platform, Brother Roshiki Muskani, and who is the founder of the Community Education Network, a contribution that he wants everyone to get an understanding of his contribution to spreading the word and opening the word to Black people about our condition and how we're going to get out of some of the problem, but also our progress. So we thank Brother Roshiki is an educator of 25 years, another institution, teaching primarily high school math and an author of prospective writing. He is a husband of 20 plus years, father and grandfather. Roshiki have a background in sports, recreation, and primary basketball player. But at the same time, he's one of the strongest conscious brothers that you can meet, seriously into health and nutrition, and seriously into contributing to the consciousness of the students that he touched. So we're very thankful to him. I want to also welcome Brother Mashenda, longtime community activist and deep in the South, working with young people, and at the same time, a deep thinker, a courageous thinker, along with a good doctor. Whenever you're sick, you need a doctor. And we as a Black people could not ask for a better doctor than the good doctor, who has some very serious recommendations, remedies, and prescriptions for us to better our mental, physical, and spiritual health. And we welcome them to the Conscious Corner. We're going to start off a little different this time, if y'all don't mind. I just want to find out from you, you know, because see people, you know, sometimes they just, I'm not going to even say that. I'm just going to say this. Is there anything that you can say that you thought that Black people did good this month, or any time that you recognize as a positive contribution to our liberation, to our consciousness, to our education, to our recognition, our achievements as Black people? So I'm going to start off with Brother Mashinda. Mashinda, you deep in the South. Can you say any good things that we have done over the last month in regards to scientific innovations, in regard to athletics, in regards to art, in regards to anything that you looked in the newspaper or heard on the news that you can say, you know, that was positive that Black people did? We're going to start on a positive note this evening. Mashinda, have you heard anything or do you have anything to comment?
Yeah, good evening. I have to think about that. I think it's a good topic for the forum tonight, you know, to discuss that. You know, I've been kind of, my battery's been kind of low the last 10 days. I've been kind of sick, so I've been just getting back in the game. But, you know, just in general, you know, looking at the news, you know, as far as I've been reading about some of the things that, you know, Brother Hembrick talks about in terms of like, you know, he mentions the mile, you know, with this queen dying and things like that. A lot of people are saluting the queen and watching TV, watching the processions and different things that's going on in Britain. But I think the good thing about it, you know, what, you know, I'm saying is bringing out a lot of other historical references as it relates to the colonialism, you know, and bringing out, you know, some of the acts of evil that had transpired over many, many years, you know, and, you know, which, you know, of course, creates a struggle for us people across the diaspora, you know, but I think it's a, you know, with social media and the general media, you know, with that story about the queen passing also brings up other information that's empowering, you know, to know, you know, how our people stood up for themselves and basically in countries where we dominated and were, you know, put in bondage and, you know, like you said, under the rule of colonialism, and how a lot of our people fought, you know, our ways out of those systems. You know, the unfortunate thing, you know, leaving us, you know, it's kind of like leaving us in ruins, you know, so to speak, in other words, but still reflects how resilient our people are. You know, when you hear about the history of like I say, relating it to the story with the Queen and England and their involvement in colonialism, you know, it creates a time for discussion about that, you know. So I've been doing just piggybacking off of that, trying to expand my awareness. And I think that you brothers on the platform can probably expound on that, you know. Well, you have been. You've been talking about that for many months, you know, about different involvement. But I think, so in the news, I think that that's what's exciting for me as far as the research and the learning that I'm partaking in and trying to understand. But again, it's been moving kind of slow. Like I said, I've been trying to get back on my feet. I'm all right. But anyway, maybe I can contribute a little more, you know, in a little while. Okay?
All right, then. The good doctor, can you think of any positive things that we've done as a people?
I'm trying to agree with Mashinda, but, you know, that's a good question. And I've been on the show and listening to you guys and listening to you, Professor Rock. I'm pretty sure there's many good things that's been done, but the media has not posted like all the, you know, negative. You know, they post negative stuff. That's what sticks with us. Mm-hmm. And they will go, you know, and do not, you know, post good things. So I'm pretty sure there's more positive than negative things we see on the news. We're brainwashed to hear the negative stuff. And even if they do mention something positive, it won't register in our brains. It'd be there just for a blip. And we hear more, you know, negative stuff about us and more positive about white supremacy. Okay. So that's why I'm here, for you to tell me what's the positive stuff that, you know, they have left, you know, unsaid in the media, man. I'm pretty sure there's more positive than the negative, man.
Yeah. All right. Well, Brother Rashiki?
Yes, sir. I appreciate your introduction, Professor Rao. That was excellent how you acknowledged everybody and their contributions to what we're doing. And I said before we came on the air, I said that we're the Fab Five right here, because we are the ones that come and on a consistent basis and devote our time to providing information that may help people, you know, if they're looking for a resource that's other than what they used to getting. Like Brother Doctor was saying, how basically we're fed propaganda on a consistent basis, and they focus a lot on negativity, where our focus is we identify what's going on from our experiences and give information that people may can grow from. So I appreciate everybody taking out their personal time to do what we're doing. And I think that's highly positive. And then also I came across learning about Dr. Ava Muhammad. And I didn't realize that some of the information that she teaches on, I have a paper on the website called The First. And when I talk to people about it, I don't know if they were getting my full scope of what I was trying to say when it comes to The First, because as African people that's all over the world, and we come to, you know, when we go through the United States, and they always talk about the first this and the first that. And when I was listening to Dr. Ava Muhammad, she kind of talked about that. And I can relate to what she was saying, because I have similar thoughts when it comes to the first. So I just, I have some more lectures to listen to from Dr. Ava Muhammad. And I learned about her just recently. So that's she kind of reminded me of Dr. Frances Cress Welsing. So I'm going to be checking out some of her material. Mm-hmm. So that's with her passing, and you know, I know that's tough for a lot of people who knew about her. And I'm just coming into discovery with her passing. So. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of like a good thing for me, mm-hmm. But you know, may God bless her soul.
Oh, good.
All right,
Brother Hembrick. First of all, Rashi, is there a meaning to that background you got?
Yes, sir. That is the chemical makeup of melanin.
Okay,
I have one also in. And it's that's been on the show. It's black and white. So this is the chemical makeup of melanin. And so it's, you know, anybody can find it on the internet, but I like having that up.
What is melanin?
Melanin is a substance that's
secreted from the pineal gland.
From the pineal gland, and most Africans, I would say, have a high concentration of it, from what I've learned, and it's a very valuable substance that we contain. Well, all people, but we have supposedly the most, being that we have the dark pigmentation, and it gives us. I think it contributes to the pigmentation, but you guys can speak a little bit more on melanin than I can. I don't have the thorough explanation for it, but I know it's a great substance that we contain.
Yeah, Dr. Richard King, he went to I went to Markham when he was a senior, and he went on to become a psychologist and an attorney. He wrote a book on melanin, Dr. Richard King. He made his transition a few years back, but he was a dynamic spokesperson for melanin. And he talked about it being the third eye, and whereas our consciousness and sense of wholeness as a people come from, along with our pigmentation, the darker we are, the more melanin we are. Some people who are out in the sun, they catch cancer. We don't catch cancer. And one of the arguments is that they are unnatural to the sun, whereas we are. But anyway, it's a deep, deep discussion that melanin, along with Malachi Andrews, who wrote the book Psychoblackology, who talked about our relationship with rhythm and our ability to perform in certain physical activity in a rhythmic way. Some people say, you know, we're athletic, or, you know, you got a fast tongue. That's why you speak so good. But your tongue is connected to your brain. And so that's that. They won't say you smart. They just say you got a bad stuff. So anyway, that's a good announcement. We'll get back to that. Brother Hembrick, you there?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And why are you doing this? Could you talk about the partitioning of Africa during the European reign, along with anything good you found?
Partitioning of what?
Partitioning of Africa. Doing. You know, the conference where they partitioned Africa all.
Was that 1888, I believe? Mm-hmm. Called the Berlin Conference.
Yeah.
All the European nations got together and carved out a piece of Africa to be colonized and raped of natural resources and enslavement also. Everybody got a piece, but the United States of America didn't get a piece. They ran on it. And then, you know, kind of commenting on the Queen, you know, Britain had most stuff around the world, not just Africa, but around the world. There's old social science saying that the sun never sets on the British Empire. As the sun is going down, it's falling on, you know, British property in terms of sovereignty and whatnot. It's a bunch of islands that they oversee, you know, Canada, you know, they're all over the world where they got their foothold, Australia, which is, you know, they sent half of their prisoners there, another half to the United States, trying to clean out their dungeons because they were tired of feeding them. During that time, Australia, they were calling it New South Wales, where they attempted to annihilate all of the Aborigine people on the island. And even on the island off the coast called Tasmania, they killed every man, woman, and child.
Mm.
Just like Columbus did when he got to the Caribbean, to the Caribs.
Mm.
Find one of them alive today. And you know, that British Empire goes on and on. It behooves me that, you know, the few black people I see that are mourning also, Anyway, that's enough of that. The one positive thing I saw, I only found one so far, is this brother who was put in as the interim coach at Nebraska, the first black coach in the history of the university. They fired the football coach yesterday and put this brother in to take over during the duration of the rest of the season. And also, while I'm on sports, I like to mention the two brothers that faced each other in combat, the Notre Dame versus Marshall, and the brother from Marshall, which is a much smaller school, won the game. The brother from Notre Dame, I guess he went home and kissed that white woman he's married to. And I was kind of glad the other brother won. But anyway, what I've been running across, so of a different subject, is called The Big Lie. It's an article in the Times yesterday about, you know, how the big lie spread. I guess they're basically talking about Donald Trump, but they went back historically on how the big lie gets spread and evolves. It took it all the way back to Socrates, Aristotle, and Plato, how, you know, they were lying about these philosophies that they were coming up with, and when in fact they just stole them from, you know, from Egyptian writings that they found, claiming it as themselves. Then in China, the same thing about the countryside. Let me just say this. You know, most of you guys are educators, and you know what a WASP accreditation is, when people from the outside come in and evaluate your school to see if learning is going on. It's called
WASP is a national recognized accrediting institution that's been approved to give accreditation to colleges, junior colleges, and high schools.
But the reason I'm bringing it up is that oftentimes it's been my experience that, you know, the school will put on what I call a dog and pony show, giving the appearance that all this stuff is going on and it's really not. They haven't put it, you know, they took like 2 weeks to put it together when it should be inclusive from the start with parents, community people, students, faculty, and staff. Anyway, they put this on, and sometimes they, you know, get by with it, sometimes they don't. Well, this dog and pony show reference I'm giving to, that I'm speaking about, happened with this empress in China, where they were trying to give the impression, you know, that the countryside was doing great. So, you know, all along the route, this guy had these farms and stuff fixed up and all this and that, to give the appearance that something was going on, and it really wasn't. Just like when major sporting events are coming to certain towns, they'll clean up the main drag of the town to get an appearance that, you know, things are going well and they're not. And then it also mentioned Hitler, you know, with the big lie with his SS agent Grubel. And Grubel recruited 1,000 people and trained them to lie about the stuff that they wanted the public to believe that was going on in Germany and surrounding countries. They also talked about, you know, a thing that happened in Ukraine when it was still under the Soviet Union. It was a great famine going on in Ukraine, but they were lying to the world, telling folks that everything was all right. And a lot of people ended up, you know, starving to death. And, you know, they brought that all the way home to Donald Trump and the lies that he put out there, how they can take hold and whatnot. So you really got to kind of be up on your P's and Q's, you know, when you're looking at stuff like that, so you don't get swept up. And I'm wondering, you know, the number of people that are not up on it. And I'm going to get off now because it looks like my friend here is having a little episode this evening with his barking. So I'll get off for now and come back a little later.
All right, good. Miss Dr. Shabazz, how you doing?
Greetings. How are you, Professor?
All right. We are discussing positive things that are associated with Black people that they've done in the area of achievement, recognition, national, international recognition, and or resistance to injustice or victimization. It's not what people did to us, it's how we responded to it that was positive. And so we were asking each person to say what they thought was a good thing that Black people did. Do you have any things that you read or witnessed on the news or somebody told you that it was positive that Black people did?
Well, from my experience, I'd like to share one of the things I think that we did here in the Los Angeles community kind of after the Rodney King Rebellion. Mm-hmm. Happened to be out here around that time. And there was a lot of great things that happened from the social work perspective. But Black Women for Wellness is one of those organizations that came out of all of that. And to me, that's a positive thing. It's an organization that's still around doing social justice, supporting Black women and Black families, because of course, when you mention Black women, it includes the family. And so I want to say that that organization is doing phenomenal things. People like Senator Holly Mitchell, you know, Great Beginnings for Black Babies. You know, there was a great collective effort around supporting health and wellness of Black women and Black families. So that's something that I like to bring to the table. That's been done. It's still being done out of and I want to say it came out of that Rodney King Rebellion, because we were the young people at that time and the elders kind of gathered around us to help us to put our energy into something positive that we could build our community despite all the destruction that had been going on. So that's something that I'd like to share with the family.
Well, good. But when you say Black Women for Wellness, do you have where they can be contacted or any information on that?
Yes, Black Women for Wellness Los Angeles is a 501c. They are, again, in Limerick Park. They do many community missions in terms of teaching Black women how to cook, in terms of, again, social justice with what we're putting on our hair. Even the Crown Act that recently was passed, that Senator Holly Mitchell was, I guess, the editor of that, that came out of the work around Black Women for Wellness. So, yeah, they're local. They can be contacted. They have a website, the phone number. They're right there in Limerick Park. Very visible in the community, doing lots of work. Jan Robinson is the acting director right now.
Okay, and Holly Mitchell's no longer state senator. She's county supervisor. Yeah.
Thank you so much, sir, for that correction.
Yeah, but she's a good person. She's doing a lot. She's very active in a lot of things. That's good. I'm just going to go over a few things that I thought was very contributing to recognition of us as a people. The first thing I want to say is, I want to say Asante signed to the over 750,000 people signed the petition in Detroit to block the abortion, rigorous abortion laws. They signed a petition to have the governor, not just the governor, but the Republicans had put on a very restrictive abortion law, and they wanted to implement it. And the people wanted to vote on it, and they wouldn't let them. So they went out and they got 750,000 signatures, mostly women registered to vote, and many Black women were part of it, as Black men were part of getting that initiative on the ballot. They said never before in the history have any group been able to get 750,000 signatures to get something on the ballot in the Michigan area. And so we want to say Asante and recognize the masses of people that participated in that. Second, in Ohio, in the state of Ohio, I think Columbus, there was a killing of a brother, Donovan Lewis. He was in his bedroom 2 a.m. The police broke into his, came into his house, and he had a vape pen that he reached for, and they shot and killed him. But the beautiful thing is the people are demonstrating, the people are demanding justice, demanding that the people, that they show the complete video, they're only showing partial video. And that's good for the people to come out and seek justice for their family and the family to seek justice because he was unarmed, there was no gun found, just a vape pen. And he was in his bed at 2 a.m. when the police came in, no knock again. And that they shot him within 2 seconds, they say, after they went to his bedroom, no more than 5 seconds. And so I'd just like to commend the brothers and sisters that stood standing up. And also Jalen Walker, he was in Ohio, I can't remember what state. His family, for their leadership and struggle against the shooting of him. He was in a car chase, he got out and ran, and they shot him in the back. And his family, and along with the various attorneys, are fighting for justice. See, that's critical to give recognition and support where we can with letters or contributions to organizations. That's what happened with Michael Brown. And now you have Corey Bailey, I think that's her name. She's a congresswoman out of Ferguson. Ferguson have gotten city council people mobilized behind this incident and seeking justice. So we want to recognize them. Another great achievement. I mean, when Joe come back, I'll talk about it. But first of all, I want to talk about Francis Nasiba, I think that's his name, Nasiba, the tennis player. His family escaped from Sierra Leone, and his daddy got a job at the tennis court place to keep it clean, or tennis club, and they lived on the premises. And he picked up a racket and started learning how to play at the age of 7 or something. And he was in the national championship for the U.S. Open, and he beat the number one guy, to get to somebody. He made a lot of money. If you get that far, you made over $1.5 million. But he lost the semifinals. But it was a great achievement because he's the first Black male to get significant tennis accomplishment since Arthur Ashe. As a matter of fact, they played in the Arthur Ashe stadium. Arthur Ashe was the one that broke apartheid in tennis with South Africa resistance. And he wrote a number of books on Black sports. And he died from HIV, from a blood transfusion that gave him HIV. And he died. And he's one of the most brilliant brothers that stood up for civil rights using his sport. But this a young man that Francis Tiafo, their parents left Sierra Leone because of the violence and the abuse and the all kind of stuff that was going on, and he got a twin brother, and so we recognize that because we like Black achievement. It's just a beautiful thing to see him out there in a predominantly white sport. The guy that beat him was a Spaniard, but in Spaniards, sometimes they see themselves as white. Spain is in Europe, so that's why they had that European man thing. But anyway, we want to recognize that. Thirdly, we want to also recognize the achievement of the US organization. This is their 57th year under the leadership of Dr. Marlana Karenga, one of the organizations that began in 1965, created Kwanzaa, created the Nguzo Saba, the seven principles, and that is Umoja, Kudichaka, Ligija. Umoja meaning unity. These are principles that they say that if we just practice, a whole lot of change will come about. And I agree with that. And that's Umoja, and that's meaning unity, which is a struggle. Unity in the family, unity in the community, and unity in the nation. Operation unity. Unity with diversity, meaning that we got diverse Black people, different classes, different religions, different perspectives, but we have to find principles by which we can work together on issues we agree on. And unity without uniformity. You don't have to say 100 assalamu alaikum, 10,000 dubani gani. You can say, you know, hey, what's up? You want to call somebody dog, that's on you. But the most important thing is, what do we come together on in unity? Men, women, child. All hands on deck, whether you want it or not. You understand? As we teach, you know, everywhere Black people is a battle line. And every day is a call to struggle. And it takes commitment. I mean, you got to live this life. It's a lifelong struggle. You may not see it in your lifetime. Just like me and the Black people that was in the Holocaust of enslavement for hundreds of years didn't see the chains come off of their family members, their grandparents and stuff. But they struggled so that they did get off. It took years to get the chains off. Some people are still mentally hugging chains. Some even helping the guy by making chains. But that's a part of the struggle. But the point is that unity, kujichakalia, self-determination, people that name themselves, define themselves, and defend themselves. That's a very important principle. You know, dogs and slaves are named by their masters. Animals and slaves are named by their masters. Free people name themselves. When South Africa got free, they renamed the country. When Europeans, Rhodesia got free, it renamed itself. When you get mental liberation, you're free to correct. The oppressor cannot be your teacher. The people that oppress you, you don't let them teach you. So we deal with self-determination. We determine who we are and what we're about, our values, our ethics, our morals. And then Umoja, collective work and responsibility. You know, we have to train our children from birth. Soon as they get out, the importance of that they're part of a team, a family, and they have a role in it. I mean, we used to call them chores, good doctor. Mashinda, you remember you had chores when you were young. Well, also your chore is never to bring embarrassment or misdeeds to the family. You don't let the world change you. You change the world. You want people to be like you. You don't need to be like D-Dog, Wild Dog, C-Dog, Crip Almighty and all of that. That's a whole new different thing. But you train them. Put your toys up. Train them from birth so that they learn to wash. We all had to wash dishes. I had to wash dishes. Well, we had jars for glasses, jelly jars, peanut butter jars. I mean, you know. And if you didn't clean them, you had to rewash them. I mean, that was just the way we had scrub boards in those days, good doctor. You understand? And man, you should come around with the washing machine, with the rollers and get your fingers crossed. We had clothesline. Every kid had a role to get things done. And we have to keep our children faced with that. A collective working responsibility. We all have it. They have a responsibility to love and cherish their family and respect their elders. And that's something you train children. You don't just hope that they come up that way. You know, it's discipline. And so that whole work and responsibility is something that you train. The new JIMA, collective cooperative economic. That's the third principle. That's fourth principle. Ujima. Cooperative economic. You know, you try, it's hard to try to buy from Black people. But sometimes you're forced to buy the best deal because of your finances. But if you're conscious, when you can, you try to buy or set up a business of your own that services Black goods and Black services so that the money circulates in the community. Cooperative economics, you teach your kids, as doctors say, financial literacy at an early age. The importance of keeping their credit together, the importance of saving, teaching them how to save, teaching them the importance that the money is not just for expenditure, it's a weapon. And then near purpose. What is your purpose in life? To do good and to bring good into the world. You know, you need direction, you need a sense of consciousness. And this is a fifth principle. Near purpose. What is your purpose in life? You know, to be the best Black person, African American, that you can be from an ethical, moral, and cultural standpoint. That's a critical aspect of purpose. Most people don't even know why they live. They just think it's here to have fun, to have sex, get high, you know, and drink. They just don't know. But you have to start training them, give them a consciousness, a mission, a sense of direction and purpose. You understand? And then Columba, creativity, the sixth principle. You know, create. Everything is not created. You can come up with magazines. You can come up. Some of the greatest entrepreneurs in the Black communities created inventions and various ways of life that created prosperity. And so the whole point is about creativity. I mean, that's your freedom, you know, in the arts, in the music. I mean, you know, if, like we always say, if the song don't have a message, then it should be instrumental. And the art got to be collective art that speaks to the community. Speaks to the betterment of us as a people. Black art is not just a Black person painting. It's what they're painting about. Or they're painting the attributes, the beautiful things that we do as a people. Do they paint with a message of consciousness and awareness? And we had artists on here last couple weeks, Dr. Akim Sanya. It's excellent, excellent presentation. So we look at that. And the last principle is imani, faith, a spiritual dynamic to the principle. They have faith in yourself, faith in your mothers, your fathers, your family, faith in all the things that make us good and conscious, faith in spirituality that make you a better person. So those are the seven principles that was created by the US organization as they celebrate their 57th year. Century plus, a half century plus of nothing but struggle and consciousness. And second, we want to also recognize the creation of Kwanzaa as well as the creation of the Taoist philosophy, which I follow. So it's a very important, strong, and beautiful beautiful message from that standpoint. I wanted to just say that.
Excuse me, Professor Ra.
Yeah.
Can you repeat the Kaida principles?
Kaida philosophy.
Yeah.
The best of African thought and practice. Mean we live for the best of us as a people. Ongoing synthesis with constant exchange with the world. In other words, it's progressive. In other words, we take the best of Malcolm, the best of Fannie Lou Hamer, the best of Frederick Douglass, the best of Martin Luther King, and we of Marcus Garvey and the best of Barack Obama, the best things that they've done from an ideological and philosophical practice and incorporated as a part of the Kawhida philosophy, the best of African thought and practice, ongoing symptoms with a constant exchange with the world, which I've been studying since 1979. And this is my 43rd year of studying and activism that I'm celebrating myself. I started in 1979 with the Kawhida philosophy. And then but this is my 57th year of activism from 1965 up to today. But and so we want to thank them for that. Also, we must look at the beauty of the Serena Williams sister, you know, in their 40s, and they are retiring. And we recognize their excellence. You know, when we was coming up, and I thank the good doctor as well as Mashinda, you couldn't be a Black quarterback in the professional rank. Or you couldn't be a center who hiked the ball, and you couldn't be a middle linebacker to call plays. They said we couldn't think. They just wanted us to hit each other and run. And we had the most dangerous position, what they call a slant, or the guy to go out and catch the ball, and things of that nature, and the halfback, all of that where you get hurt a lot. But anyway, now you got Black quarterbacks everywhere. You got two Black quarterbacks playing in the pros. I used to hang with Shaq Harris, who played for the Rams. He's one of the first pro Black quarterbacks. Him and Joe Ferguson that played for the Broadway Joe, that played for Pittsburgh Steelers. Shaq was selected as a substitute to play in the Pro Bowl. He made MVP of the Pro Bowl. He was the most accurate quarterback out of Grambling. The next year, they made him second string by a white boy who came out of college. Then the next year, they cut him. Those are the things that we used to go through, but straight out efforts by Black people to change it through struggle has opened up the door. So those are some of the things. Now, let's talk about this queen thing.
And Professor Rob, before we move on, Dr. Shabazz had her hand up, and she wanted to. Dr. Shabazz?
Are you still there?
Sister, make it happen. You there?
I'm here.
Did you have your hand up and you wanted to have a comment or something?
No, I was just congratulating and responding to some of the wonderful things being said by the professor in regards to some of the highlights he was making and some of his journey. And so I was just applauding his experiences that he was sharing and his journey and his activism.
Okay, thank you.
We got to talk about the Amir Park as a historical place of community that have drum of players every Sunday and weekend and free marketplaces, and it's a place for Black people. The Crenshaw district was supposed to be named after Black people, Black Town or Little Africa, but they wouldn't do it. The petty bourgeoisie fought against it. But the point is that the Mer Park is a historical park. And, you know, Martha Gibbs had a studio there, and she was very active there. We used to have the Black Holocaust Conference there at her building. And she also had Memory Lane down Santa Barbara, as well as had some interest in the Mark Theater. You have the Jazz House and all kinds of things going on in the Mer Park. And there's a struggle to keep it because they want to run off the Black people and build houses or do something else and tear it down. So we commit the people that are struggling. We're going to have some of them on in the near future. The other thing that we're going to,
Professor Rod, just wanted to add to what you were saying about the black quarterbacks.
Now,
Ricky Turner out of Compton High School, who won a CIF championship at Compton High in 78, and they lost the championship in 79. He went to Washington State on a scholarship as a quarterback in 1980. And when I came to the school, he was a senior. And what happened was he was the starting quarterback. Mark Rippon, many people may know Mark Rippon, was a freshman that came in, and he had to split time with the white quarterback, Mark Rippon. And then Mark Rippon went on to play for the Washington Redskins. And you had, I think it was, what's the guy name that played? It's not Doug. It was, Doug Williams won the Super Bowl. And Mark Rippon came in to play for the Washington Redskins. He came in and he lost his position after winning a Super Bowl to Mark Rippon. And so that's a similar story that you were sharing about Shaq Harris. Was it Shaq Harris?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they for some reason, you know, they do that. They take us, we accomplish big things, and they come and just snatch us and replace it with a white guy. And even when I was at Washington State, my sophomore year, I was at Washington State. I earned a starting position because we had one of the white guys that was a senior, two guard, went down on an injury, and I was playing so well, they put me in the starting lineup. And maybe a few games later, I was replaced by a walk-on player that was a track athlete that walked on. They put him in the starting lineup and took me out of the starting lineup with no explanation, no reason. We weren't even losing. Mm. So it happens all the time. Mm. And for what reasons? We can just fathom all kind of reasons why they would do that. Okay, I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, but the beautiful thing is you went on and graduated from college, and you went on to become a prolific teacher and educator. You got more out of sports. A lot of the cats that play pro, it's only a 2 to 3 year lifetime before they, you know, get cut or somebody else take their place through draft or something. The average player is 3 to 5 years. And then at the same time, most of them end up broke. But those of you that get your education, you got to get more out of the sport than the sport get out of you. And I'm going to commend you for being one of the few black athletes out of Cal State Long Beach that graduated with a degree and went on to teach people your experiences. That's progress. So you teach another athlete, hey man, get your degree while you're down there. Don't just play sports, lay up in the dorm and let the coach give you classes that you don't have to attend. You understand, just for eligibility, do it. And that's an important point that you make. And so we want to also commend Brother Joe Hembrick for that community point he painted of unity of Black and Africans and Latinos working together at Centennial. We're going to take a picture of it and show it on the show probably next week or the week after Eva Month. But let's talk about this Queen thing. I want to thank all y'all for your comments on the Queen passing and how some Black people identify with it. But as Mashinda was saying, there's a lot of articles about the colonialization and what they call the European, what do they call it? Well, it's all just about European, but it's called the Commonwealth, where they have many different countries that's a part of it that were taken over through colonialism. And we have to deal with what they call the United Kingdom. the United Kingdom. Before we get to that, there's a United Kingdom. Then we get to the ugly side of Queen Elizabeth. And you got to remember that United Kingdom, which they are king of, and the other people of the Commonwealth, is all white nation. England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland, and the island nation of Northwestern Europe. All of them are the what they call the United Kingdom, really a white nationalist organization that participated in the Holocaust of enslavement, that participated in the partitioning of Africa, and that participated in a lot of racism. That's one of the reasons Meghan, who married to one of the sons of the king now, left. And his statement was that one of the reasons they left was because of the racist policies that they practiced. They have a group called the Britain Movement of Black people in Britain that resisted the racism and had anti-Islamic phobia and Islamic phobia that they had in Britain. And that while she was queen, she never spoke out. And plus, they were in an alliance with South Africa to support apartheid during her reign. She's there 70 years. And I want you to understand that there's a lot of things that happened racially that she didn't speak out against, didn't apologize for, or didn't create a policy to change with regards to the racial discrimination throughout Europe, or the condemnation of the United States and Israel for how they're doing the Palestinians, and the role that Britain and these white nations play in the abuse of the Australians, wiped out all the Australian aboriginals. Joe was, Hendrick was talking about when they come out in Wales. So we look at it and we, you know, they had a right to feel bad about the Queen, but all these accolades, that's what they do. They try to change history. And if you don't know history, you don't study, you get caught up in it. So we show a couple of those articles that was written right after she died, Brother Rigo, if you don't mind sharing, a Rushdie with regards to, if you don't mind. The Queen represented racist violence as much as she did glamour. There's a whole article on that. You understand? Let me read. And so, when you see Black people talking about, they were all at the parade talking about, I just want my kids to see the king and see the queen, you know, her wealth. And go back down a little bit. You know, this is all, these are all examples of her abuse and their policies. That's one of the reasons the sister that married the one of them, I can't remember his name, she left. She said, you can stay here, but I'm out of here. The newspapers was on her case. They were mistreating her and her mama. So they moved to California. You know, so that's very important. And that we as a people, As the good doctors say, that we read and study and get our own interpretation, not for the standpoint of demonizing or arguing with them about their lies. You know, it just goes to show you, as Joe was saying, the big lie. They've been lying all their life. How do you take North America, wipe out the Native American, and act like you never did anything wrong? Wipe just the Native American. I'm talking about you come here 13 colonies and then you take over the whole continent and put these people on reservation. Cut their hair, make them learn English, put them on. I mean, it's just notorious. but not your consciousness. I mean, what can you do about it? One thing you can do is educate others and contribute to organizations that are resisting, and then have a mindset of consciousness and awareness yourself. Don't let the propaganda tear you apart. So anybody want to respond to that, those comments? Linda, you there?
Oh, yes, I'm here, but I have no comments. I'm just listening and learning and loving it.
Okay, good doctor. You have any comments? Good doctor?
Same here, just listening and learning.
All right, Brother Joe, you back yet?
Yeah, I never left. I'm just
okay.
Listening.
Go ahead, Brother Henry.
Well, I was looking at all them jewels that she's wearing. Every time you see them, they, you know, talking about bling, bling. You know, the brother and sister over here ain't got nothing on the bling, bling of the royal houses of Europe. And all of that bling, bling comes from the motherland. And, you know, that's something that people need to know. Actually, everything that industrialized the Western world comes from there. That was a point I want to make about, about the queen and getting into a ancient historical piece here. Because before them Europeans rose up, you know, they was in rags. You know, the King Massey Musa, you know, the piece that went on his horses, on the horse's back, you know, before you put the saddle on, they put this little material piece on the back of the horse before they put the saddle on. Or during Massey Musa's reign, that blanket on the horse was better than anything any European monarch was wearing at the time. Mm. And they talking about we savages and whatnot. But if you look in ancient European history, and mainly Britain, it's a book by Edward Scobie. I think it's called Blacks in Britain. And it goes into, you know, when the Twa people were up there. As I presented in an earlier show, the Twa, the Hutu, the Kalahari, which the European gave a negative connotation, calling them pygmies, they were the first in royal houses up there in Europe. If you look at the early family crest in this book by Scobie, it shows the pictures of the early family. And the faces are black. And as the centuries go by, they get lighter and lighter and lighter until they come with like Queen Elizabeth. Even the sister, I don't know if you heard of Cardinal Domenici and his son, Alessandro, out of Italy. You know, he had 14 children. You know, Alessandro was a brother from a cardinal, a white cardinal, and his maid servant Anna, who's an African woman. And Alessandro had 14 children, and they married into all of the royal houses. One of the most famous was one by the name of Carlotta. And you see her, I think she's on the cover of several books. I think she's on J. Rogers, A Nation Knows No Color Line, sister. And, you know, her children married into all these, you know, royal houses. So, you know, they're not as white as they claim to be. Kind of cleaned it up and kind of eradicated it, you know, as the hundreds of years went by. Especially when the most detrimental thing I think they did was give the negative connotation to the Twa, who we know as pygmies, who gave civilization to the planet. And a lot of black people bought into it too. You know, we kind of look at the pygmy as like a little derogatory name and stature. But let me say this in closing, the head of Hamaca, which we know as the Sphinx, that's the head of the Twa, okay? And Hamaca was a surprise to the Egyptians. It was already there when they got there. You understand what I'm saying? They had to dig it out of sand. And, you know, they got this whole crazy cartoon about the nose being chiseled off when it was really Napoleon had his general shoot the nose off claiming that N is laughing at me. But anyway, these Twa people were the first inhabitants of all lands everywhere. And I read a thing in that book was a black king in Britain. I can't think of his name, but his army was Watusi brothers, like Brother Ra and Kareem, all them brothers 6'9" and 6 whatever. And the story talks about when these armies would ride the horses, their feet would drag the ground. Okay? So this European dominance hasn't been for too long. Mm. And, you know, we need to find out what was going on before, what happened, remedy it, so we can get back to where we need to be. Peace.
All right. Thanks, John. Anyone else have any other comments? Sister Shabazz or Mashinda?
Well, I had something I wanted to share. I was sitting here with my 12th grade daughter, and she was asking me about current events. And I said, well, we're here. This is a group of historians right here. Listen to what we're talking about right now. But then you guys happen to be talking about the queen, and her and her peers have a lot to say about this queen that they don't feel is their queen at all. And so she's excited because she's taken an AP psychology class and an ethnic studies class and a government class. So she's looking forward to sharing some of this information from today's presentation on the queen being as racist as she is glamorous. So she was really excited by that article, and I wanted to share that with the group. And thank you so much again for taking my comments.
And Brother Rasha Keith, make sure you send her those articles on the queen about the racism. Email them to her. So, okay. Anybody else? What about you, Mashinda? You was going to say something.
And can you email me that article also? This is Linda.
Okay. Yeah, he got it, Linda. Mashinda?
No comments right now.
Okay. Good doctor, any comments?
No, none right now.
Okay, then, Rasha Key, tell them about next week, Wednesday and Monday. You're on mute.
I got you.
Okay.
So, on Monday, we're going to honor Dr. Ava Muhammad, that recently passed away, and we're expecting to have some members from the Nation of Islam there. So hopefully that's going to happen where we have a nice showing for her. And then let me share what we have Wednesday. All right, Wednesday. We have Brother Thomas coming back, and he's going to talk about abortion, the modern post-pregnancy prophylactic. So that should be very interesting. He gave us a taste of that the last time he was here, but he's going to do a whole presentation on that. So that should be interesting. Okay, Professor Rye.
Well, first of all, again, we want to thank everyone for chiming in today, and we want to thank Linda for recommending guests, and you too, Dr. Shabazz, any subject or issue that you think we should discuss on the show or that you would like to lead in a discussion, give us a call. We want to just spread truth to all our people and put it on YouTube as well as share it with our friends, because each of you have something. Y'all been in the struggle a long time, and you have experienced things. When we recognize Dr. Ava Muhammad, we're recognizing the best in all Black men. It's not just her. She's just a symbol. She just represents the spirit of resistance and progress and consciousness of Black women that contributed to our struggle. So we're dealing with Black womanism, not Black feminism, Black womanism. And that's what we're going to be discussing, along with recognizing her as a symbol of a strong Black woman. And so hopefully you will tune in next Monday. All right, Brother Rothstein, close us out.
Okay, so Sister Linda and Sister Make It Happen, can you please stay for a minute? I want to ask you something. So we appreciate everybody being here, like always. We're doing this, and we're having a great time doing it and coming to you every week, twice a week, sometimes three times a week. And I have a special treat for us in November, and I just... I can't wait till this happens. So just put the third week of November on your calendar. It's going to be a special treat for us. So I'm getting excited about it. So now all I can say is Conscious Corner, and each one teach one. Everybody have a good evening.
And one thing, when you talk to Ms. Shabazz, ask her to get as much information as you can about women wellness, and see if we can't have somebody from that organization discuss that issue. If she don't do it, okay?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. We'll do. All right. I'm one of